Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Did you know that within the last 50 years, first-time marriage rates have declined, while divorce rates have doubled? This may very well be a sign that our society's approach to dating, relationships, and marriage just might be severely flawed. Do you think it's time our society experienced an upgrade in our attitudes, beliefs, and overall mindset toward dating as we know it? My guest tonight believes we most definitely need to significantly modify the manner in which we approach male-female romantic relationships in the 21st century. He believes that our roadmap to romantic satisfaction and sexual enjoyment is very, very outdated and no longer relevant in the new millennium. He has written a very interesting ebook that explains in detail all of the psychological modifications that need to take place in order to create longer lasting and more satisfying relationships between men and women. Who is this man who has the balls to come out and say that the current state of relationships in society needs to be totally re-examined, if not flat out deleted and replaced? His name is J.J. Roberts, and this up-and-coming author from Bulgaria in Europe has written an eye-opening ebook entitled Sex 3.0, A Sexual Revolution Manual, and he will be here tonight to share his unique brand of knowledge and wisdom as Mr. Roberts takes time out of his busy schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this A. Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how'd you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode One. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode One, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
You know this, tougher than a lion, ain't gon' need in trying. I live with a sky, and yep, you know this, never lying. drop in my runway. Never looked so clear. But the hottest witness in the heels right here. No fear. So why you getting your crap on? Getting my fly on. Sincere. I see you aiming at my pedestal. I better let them know.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, January 26th. Man, the first month of the new year is almost over already. 11 more months to go. That's right, 11 more months to go. This year is already, to me, starting to go by real quick. What we're going to be talking about tonight is, now most of my guests are actually domestic guests. I'd say probably 98.5% of my guests are from the United States. My guest tonight is probably, I want to say, one of only 2 to 3 times that I will be interviewing somebody who lives in another country. Now, I think I've interviewed a few people that were from another country, but they were currently living in the U.S. But my guest tonight, I will actually be talking to him from Bulgaria. He lives in Sofia, Bulgaria, in Europe. So, yeah, he'll be one of my rare international guests. I think the first time I interviewed an international guest was Esther Perel. I don't know if you remember when I had her on way back when. Esther Perel, I interviewed her, and at the time I interviewed her, I think she was living in Italy. Yeah, I think she was living in Italy at the time I interviewed her. So it's going to be a great discussion. I've read most, if not all, of the book, and man, he has some of his themes are actually familiar, I mean, are similar to my own themes in my books, and then he has other themes that are very new and unique, and it's an eye-opening book, so I look forward to that discussion. Upcoming in the next few weeks, I have some guests lined up, starting with, excuse me, I'm getting a case of the hiccups. I hope not. That's the worst thing you do is be on a talk radio show and you got the damn hiccups. I don't want any hiccups. But next week I will be talking to a guest about the pressure of women to get married. If you're a woman, have you ever had, like, your mother, your father, your older sister, your close friends just get on your case about being married? Well, that's going to be the discussion next week. Women who are feeling pressured to get married, and the guests. Her name is Nicole Mollier. Nicole Mollier will be my guest next week. Then 2 weeks from tonight will be a guest who will be on my show for the third time. She'll be only the third guest I've had on my show 3 or more times. And her name is Yolanda Yanni Brown. She's a couples expert from Chicago. And she will be discussing making love better, making love better. And then finally, 3 weeks from tonight, I will be talking about my upcoming speaking engagement in Las Vegas, and I'll be talking to Sasha. Matter of fact, this will be Sasha's fourth time on my show. This will be his fourth time on my show, Sasha. He is the one who organized the Direct Dating Summit in London in November of 2010, and now he's organizing another one. The Direct Dating Summit Part 2 is going to be in Las Vegas March 17th and 18th. March 17th and 18th. So if you're interested, make plans to be in Vegas in mid-March, and I will be a featured speaker at the Direct Dating Summit Part 2. Now, I got love for all my listeners and supporters, but I got special love for my chat room listeners, my chat room, starting with Adrian, a.k.a. Diva 362636. Diva said that LeBron James is been on a roll the last few games. Now, it just so happens that Dwayne Wade has been sitting out the last few games. So she was implying that when Dwayne Wade not in the game, LeBron is able to just take over. She loves her some Ohio players, man. Wasn't that a group, the Ohio players? Ow. But yeah, Diva 362636 in the house. I got Black Man USA in the house. Not Asian man, not white man, not Hispanic man, but Black Man USA in the house. I got Justice Bourne in the house. Justice Bourne in the house. My guest is in the chat room as well. I got Stan 1405744444. Mode 1. That's right. Stan is in the house. I got Chris Sibbles in the house. Chris Sibbles in the house. And I'm sure some more of my loyal and regular listeners will be in. Hey, Mo, when are you heading north to Boston? Tom Brady's stealing all the quality women. Yeah, I bet Tom Brady is getting his share of pussy. But other shout-outs will be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry, my cousins, J.P. Jones in Chicago, Athabaw in Maplewood, New Jersey, Christopher Curry in Detroit, Michigan, Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam the third, EVP3. Follow him on Twitter, at Match One. Matter of fact, some guys were cracking up when I told them about EVP3's classic saying back in the day. When we used to live in the same city, if EVP3 caught me being lazy and just chilling at the crib, wasting my time, he would say, man, why are you just mildewing at the crib, man? You need to get out of mildew de facto mode. And I got a lot of notes about that because people were cracking up on that. They said they're going to have to steal that one. Yeah, so that's the code word. Whenever one of your friends is being lazy and you want to just light a fire in his butt to get him up off his ass and do something productive, say, man, why are you in mildew de facto mode, man? You just mildewing at the damn crib. Quit mildewing, man. Other shout-outs be my fabulous Jeff Kitten, Pam Taylor, Edie Lee Harris, Vanessa Turner, Paulina Long, Shundais, Alan Hill, Sophia Green. Yeah, that's right, NASA Metcalf. All my female supporters in my Facebook female supporters group, much love to you. Much love to you, everybody else. Hey, man, those games last week, if you're a National Football League fan, man, those had to be two of the best games, but also two of the most heartbreaking games. Oh, my God. I don't know if I've ever seen an NFC championship and an AFC championship that both on the same day went to the wire like that and both had like that heartbreaking loss. Like first Baltimore, man, they played a hell of a game, particularly on the defensive end. But then they just, the kicker, man. Well, first the guy had what looked like a for sure touchdown and he let the defender knock the ball out of his hands. Then
the kicker missed a 32-yard field goal, which should have been a chip shot. What's up, Smarten Up? I see Smarten Up in my chat room. I don't know, man. I felt sorry for that kicker and the guy who got the ball knocked out. Because the defense, man, they play such a hell of a game, man. The Ravens, they should. I'm so sick of New England, man. I know if I got some listeners from Boston, you know, nothing personal, but, man, I'm sick of seeing New England in the Super Bowl. Then on the NFC end, man, if you didn't, you had to feel sorry for the brother Williams, the son of the White Sox general manager. He has gotten death threats. He got death threats for first he allowed the ball, a punt, to knock off his knee. It bumped his knee, and he didn't catch it. Then in overtime, he allowed the ball to be fumbled out of his hands. And, yeah, he received death threats, man. He received death threats. So, I mean, I love sports. I love competition. But, you know, we don't need to kill no brothers over just because, I mean, it's a damn game, you know. At the end of the day, it's just a damn game. Unless somebody must have bet about, you know, $500,000 on the game or something. But at the end of the day, it's just a game, you know. I ain't making more money or less money because somebody won or lost. So, you know, let's keep everything in perspective. Interesting in the NBA, man. L.A. got a little rivalry. You know, some cities got two teams in the same city. Like Chicago has the Cubs and the White Sox. New York has the Giants and the Jets. And in baseball, they got the Mets and the Yankees. Now L.A., of course, has the Lakers and the Clippers, and they were getting kind of testy yesterday. I didn't see the game, but I saw the highlights. Chris Paul was talking mad shit. I didn't know Chris Paul was that talkative. He was talking mad shit to Kobe and whoever else. President of the United States gave his State of the Union the other night, but the big story to do with President Obama is Arizona Governor Jan Brewer. Have you seen that picture? I'm just going to speak frankly on my show. That picture pissed me the fuck off. I don't like seeing a picture of that woman with her hand, finger, all in your boy's face. What is that about, man? I don't know, man. Somebody's Secret Service, somebody should have been over there. Because if I was the president, I don't know. My street side might have came out. My street side might have came out at that moment, and it would have been a different news story today because I would have been like, bitch, get your fucking finger out my face. No, get your fucking finger out my face. Somebody said, yeah, he should have sicked his first lady on her so it won't look like a man beating up on a woman. He should have said, Michelle, take care of this shit. Michelle would have clocked that bitch ass, man. What the fuck, man? Don't be pointing your finger in the fucking president of the United States face. I mean, there's presidents that I didn't even like in the past that I wouldn't be so disrespectful as to put my finger in their face. That's just, that is just the ultimate disrespect. Now, President Obama, you know, he basically says no big deal, but no, that's a big fucking deal. Don't put your finger in the face of the fucking president. Do not like that shit at all. If you're old school, if you're a little older and used to watch TV when you're a little kid, Epstein is dead. If you ever watched the show Welcome Back, Carter, you remember Epstein, and the actor who played Epstein has left us. He was a good actor. He always cracks me up on that show. And Joe Paterno has passed away from Penn State. Now, this is an interesting story. Two interesting stories to tell before I go to my intermission break. Pat Sajak and Vanna White said they was both fucked up back in the day when they was hosting Wheel of Fortune. Ain't that something, man? I mean, that takes balls for them to admit that shit. That's something I would just probably took to the grave with me. But, yeah, they both said they used to be fucked up when they was hosting the show. Damn, I would have never known. My mother used to watch that show religiously. I watched it erratically. But, yeah, Pat Sajak said, you know, he used to have some Jack Daniels and, you know, whatever else, and he was fucked up while he was doing that show. And so was Vanna Wayne. I'm like, dude. T.O., Terrell Owens, going back to NFL for a second, he said he's broke. That's just so sad when you see these professional athletes getting these million-dollar contracts, making all this money, and then when they retire or close to retiring or right after they retire, they say that they broke or near broke. Man, manage your damn money. What the fuck? I wouldn't have anybody else. Somebody said the will and the will of fortune was covered in cocaine. That's messed up. That's messed up. But yeah, T.O. is broke. That's fucked up. I will be back after this 4-minute intermission break to get started with my guests. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back after. I'm trying to think if I got any more announcements before I go to my intermission break. Any more announcements? No, I don't think so. Okay, so I'll be back in about 4 minutes. Don't go. Oh, wait. Yeah, I knew. Yeah, my new book. I knew it was something on my mind. I want to plug my new book. It's been out for about a month, but I'm still going to plug it. Ooh, Say It Again. Somebody in the chat room mentioned that they have it and they love it. I've been getting nothing but praises from both men and women. That's my new book. It's called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral Sex. Not O-R-A-L sex, but A-U-R-A-L sex. So check that out. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I'll be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
To know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, "You got a talent for this rollerblading thing." And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, "Yes, I love to rollerblade." I said, "Well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading." I said, "Your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex?" And she was like, "Oh my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses?" I was like, "Is that a trick question?"
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives,
sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. My guest for the evening is a former rock journalist from England who followed the standard script of conventional dating, or what he terms fenced relationships. We'll talk about that during the conversation, fenced versus unfenced. He followed fenced relationships for the first half of his adult life before exploring sexual relationships not based on enforced or obligatory monogamy, or what he refers to as unfenced relationships for the second half of his adult life. The result was his first ebook, Sex 3.0, a sexual revolution manual, a fascinating insight into the modern day culture of Sex 2.0, which is based on fear and deception, and its much needed replacement, Sex 3.0, which represents the death of fear and a return to nature. So, without further ado, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network and Upfront and Straightforward listeners, give it up for my guest, J.J. Roberts. What's happening, J.J.?
Hey, Alan, how's it going?
Oh, man, I cannot complain. I cannot be complaining. Glad to have you on the show, and let's just get right into it. At what point in your life did you realize that you had the skills to write a book?
Well, I've been a music journalist since the early 1990s.
Oh, okay.
Rock music was my thing, and it was more of a sideline rather than my main job, because I don't know if you've ever done music journalism, it's actually not that well paid.
Hey, JJ, can I ask you a favor?
Sure.
I'm hearing a little echo in the background. Do you have my show on at the same time you're talking?
Let me close the window. Hang on.
Okay.
Is that better?
Okay. Yeah, I don't hear it anymore, because at first, okay, I was kind of hearing either a voice or my own voice in the background. So you were saying you don't make much money doing that, and okay.
Yeah, but I always liked writing, so I still did it. I still did it, and I always loved music, so that's how I started off in writing.
Okay. Now, more specifically, what series of events in your life, particularly as it relates to dating relationships, caused you to come up with the concepts that you outline in your book and ultimately put your thoughts and concepts and beliefs and attitudes on paper?
Well, I mean, it was a long progress. I mean, like you said, for the first half of my adult sex life, basically I followed the standard script, which is what society says you're supposed to do, dating, conventional relationships, or what I call fenced relationships in the book. And they weren't as idealistic as society presents them to be. But this is what we're all supposed to do anyway. And essentially, I tried that for the first half of my adult sexual life, and I ended up drifting more towards unfenced relationships, not based on enforced monogamy, for the second half of my adult sexual life. And so it's pretty much 50-50, so I have a good balance, a good view of both sides. And I was able to contrast and to compare the two.
Okay. Real quick, I want to welcome Apple Capital Group in my chat room, Apple Capital Group, and Casey Simone. Casey Simone has joined me in the chat room. Do you think that many of the kind of fantasy, romantic fairy tales that are depicted and emphasized in many G-rated and PG-rated films tend to contribute to a lot of men and women's unrealistic attitudes towards romantic relationships in the real world?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's society at large has an agenda, which is to promote fenced relationships exclusively. And there's a reason behind that agenda, which, you know, I talk about in the book and we can put in this chat.
Okay, well, let's get right to it. Well, first, before I ask you what's the difference between fenced and unfenced, I'm going to just first ask you, what is your definition of a relationship in general?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, because one of the things, I did a lot of research for this book. I'll talk a bit about exactly how I wrote the book, because it was a little bit unconventional. I set out in August 2009 on a around-the-world trip. And when I say around-the-world trip, I mean a complete circumnavigation of the globe. August 2009, I started, and I headed west with the plan to keep going until I got back to London again. It took me 2 years and 3 months. I went to maybe 45, maybe 48 different countries in that time, writing and researching this book and asking and interviewing people. And one of the things that really surprised me is one of the common questions I ask people is I ask them to define the word relationship. And the really surprising thing is when you ask people that, they can't come up with a good definition. Now, that doesn't mean that people don't know and can't recognize what a relationship is. People have a very deep understanding of what a relationship is, when a relationship's good, when a relationship's bad, and when it's best, you know, when it's best to cut your losses. But it's not at a cognitive level, it's at an emotional level. So if you ask people to define the word relationship, they can't really come up with a good definition. They come up with a kind of woolly definition about, oh, shared connection or shared emotions. But people have all kinds of relationships in their lives. In the broadest sense, if you talk about the word relationship, you can have an employer-employee relationship. Friends is a kind of relationship. Landlord-tenant is a kind of relationship. Boyfriend-girlfriend is a kind of relationship. And these are very different arrangements, but yet we apply the word relationship to all of them, which means they all have something in common that makes them a relationship. And when you drill down on that and you ask people why, they can't really define it. And for me, the word relationship expressed in its purest form can be simplified into two words, and those two words are mutual reward.
Mutual reward.
Mutual reward. The word relationship doesn't mean anything else. If you have mutual reward, you have a relationship. If you don't have mutual reward, you don't have a relationship. Like if you meet someone socially and they like you and you don't like them, you're not going to become friends, because it's one way. There's no mutual reward. And likewise, if you establish mutual reward but it breaks down, then so does the relationship. Why? Because that's all the word relationship means, mutual reward. And it doesn't matter if it's a business relationship, a friendship, sexual relationship, or anything else.
Huh. Okay, that's interesting. I would have to, I guess, agree with that.
I mean, away all the bullshit. That's all it's about.
Yeah, mutual. Because you're right. Because I guess no relationship could last, or realistically would last, if it was totally one-sided. And matter of fact, that's how I've always defined
relationship.
Say that again.
There's a lot of confusion about the word relationship because it gets misused in language all the time. For example, you often hear the term unhealthy relationship. Now, bearing in mind the word relationship only means mutual reward, you can't have unhealthy mutual reward. It doesn't make any sense. It's a contradiction. You can be in an unhealthy situation, but it's not a relationship. Relationship only means mutual reward. It doesn't mean anything else.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I found a lot of parts in your book, man. Very interesting. Some things I would say you enlightened me on. And other things I found very similar to my own beliefs, principles, and philosophies through my three books related to my Mo 1 philosophy. But, that is interesting. Because I always define, one of the things I talk about in my book is manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, in many ways, that's my opinion of what manipulation is when someone is giving you the impression that you're entering into a mutually beneficial, mutually rewarding, you know, relationship. But in the long run, you see that it's basically one-sided.
Yeah, I mean, manipulation essentially is people giving the benefit of mutual reward by being value leeches, being value suckers, but trying to give the impression at the same time that it's mutual reward.
Exactly.
That's exactly what manipulation is.
Yeah. Okay. Now that we've defined relationship, now enlighten my audience on your unique term of fenced relationships versus unfenced relationships.
People are under the impression that there's lots of different kinds of sexual relationships. You can have boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. You can have, I don't know, maybe a woman who's having an affair with their boss or vice versa. You can have gay or straight relationships or transgender. People have this impression that there's all different kinds of sexual relationships, but there's not. There's only two. And this really helps introduce a lot of clarity and clear away a lot of confusion when you look at it like that. Because what I term fenced relationships basically means two people agreeing to fence in their sexuality and to make it unavailable to everybody else in the entire world. So a conventional boyfriend-girlfriend relationship or a husband-wife relationship is based on this premise. So these are fenced relationships. Now, unfenced relationships are basically relationships not based on enforced monogamy. And there's a key difference here. A lot of your listeners will probably think in terms of open relationships or swinging and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we've talked about that on this show.
But unfenced relationships are not the same thing. Unfenced relationships just means there's no fence. In other words, there's no enforced monogamy. And it's not, the two things are not the same thing as like open relationships and closed relationships. There's a subtle but important difference. And that is, it's possible to have a fenced relationship that is not monogamous. And it is also possible to have an unfenced relationship with just one person. So an example of a fenced relationship that is not monogamous would be swingers. because swingers are typically married couples. Marriage is, by definition, a fenced relationship. The difference with swingers is that they have a gate in their fence, and they can both agree to open the gate and let someone else in, or another couple in who might typically be another couple of swingers. So that's an example of a fenced relationship that's not monogamous. And an unfenced relationship you can just have with one person, because relationships go through phases. If you're in the, let's say, the romantic infatuation stage of a relationship, even if you have the option, which is all that unfenced means, having the option, you can choose not to exercise it. If you're not interested, then you just don't exercise it. It doesn't change the nature of the relationship. It's still unfenced. But you're unfenced just means you always have the option. And if you choose to exercise it, you don't need the permission of your partner. Whether you choose to exercise it or not is up to you. That's what unfenced means.
Okay, so fenced, there's no opening in the fence. And unfenced,
unless
there's still fence around, but there's an opening.
Yeah, essentially.
You have the opportunity, if you choose, to allow a third party into the relationship.
Well, I mean, it's not allowing a third party into the relationship. That's more of a fenced way of thinking about it. Unfenced simply means you always have the option to hook up with someone else, and whether you choose to exercise it or not is up to you, and you don't require permission. That's what unfenced means. If you require permission to introduce someone else, then that's kind of like swingers. Basically,
okay, let me understand this then.
Yeah.
The way my mind is processing it, because I tend to look at a lot of relationships as monogamous versus non-monogamous, so what would be the distinction between a fenced relationship and a monogamous, and then what would be the distinction between an unfenced and a non-monogamous?
Well, unfenced, like I said, it just means that there is no agreement, there is no enforced monogamy in place.
That would be the same as non-monogamous, right?
Not necessarily.
What would be the distinction then?
Because you can have a fenced relationship that isn't monogamous, like swingers.
So you're saying that swingers are... I'm confused now. It's almost like you're saying swingers are non-monogamously monogamous.
No, I'm saying swingers are fenced because they require permission to introduce someone else into the... either to hook up or to introduce someone else into the relationship. In other words, it's a permission-based sexual relationship. That's the distinction and that's the difference.
Well, no, I would have to partially disagree with you because I had a person on my show, and what they talked about, I once asked them, what is the difference between an open relationship and swinging?
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the word permission. They said that swinging is when you and your partner tend to have sex with, say, another couple, and that pretty much involves, as you would put it, permission. Whereas they said an open relationship is where you basically can fuck anybody you want to, and you don't necessarily have to tell your partner or seek permission from your partner. It's just kind of an unwritten rule. You just kind of know it, that your partner has the freedom to fuck other people if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So based on this discussion I had with this particular guest, I would almost say that an open relationship, how they described it, is similar to what you're describing as an unfenced relationship.
Well, I mean, I don't really like the term open relationship, and here's why. The opposite of open would be closed. So in other words, let's say a married couple or a monogamous boyfriend-girlfriend relationship would be closed.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that shops and restaurants close. People don't close. Shops and restaurants, the metal shutters come down, the lights go out, there's no one there. So that's not really a very good description of the dynamic of what's going on, because if you're in a faithful monogamous relationship and you meet someone you find attractive, you're still going to find them attractive. And if they give you attention, you might even find it flattering, even if you don't act on it and you stay totally faithful. So in that kind of situation, essentially you're leaning on the fence and flirting with someone on the other side of the fence, but you're refusing to hop over the fence because you have this agreement with your partner to fence in your relationship. So that's, for me, that's a much better description of the dynamic of what's actually going on than to think about it in terms of open and closed. You either agree to fence in your sexuality or you don't, essentially.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll say this. Half of me understands what you're saying, but half of me just kind of looks at it as semantics, whereas mm-hmm. we're kind of using different terminology. But again, I know for me, and I'm not saying you should look at things the same way I do, but I tend to look at a lot of what you're describing simply as monogamous and non-monogamous, because I've had when I have a non-monogamous relationship with a woman, I don't seek permission from her to fuck anybody. I fuck whoever I want to fuck when I want to fuck them. And it's just kind of, again, an unwritten rule that I'm going to be doing that. And she, of course, it's not one-sided. She has the freedom to do the same thing. Whereas when I'm in a monogamous relationship, you know, obviously, you know, I expect her to be sexually exclusive with me as she would expect me to be sexually exclusive with her. But anyway, I don't want to get too stuck on that. So
one thing before you move on is that I would say that when people typically describe open relationships, there's usually one couple at the source of the open relationship, which is a possible difference which might help you understand. Like, you know, on Facebook you can set your status to be, I'm in an open relationship with this one person. So with an open relationship in the sense that you understand it, there is a couple at the source of it. Whereas
I see what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, I would never set my Facebook status to be I'm in an open relationship with one person because I'm unfenced.
Okay.
So I'm not I'm in unfenced relationships with a number of people. There is no couple at the source of it that I'm deviating from in order to get, you know, variety in my sexual life.
Okay, now the title of your book is Sex 3.0, but you kind of give a history of relationships that you divide into three categories, Sex 1.0, Sex 2.0, and Sex 3.0. Let's start with Sex 1.0. What is your general definition of a Sex 1.0 relationship?
Well, I mean, sex 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0 are basically three different times or three different eras in the entire history of human sexual relationships.
Okay.
So, broadly speaking, sex 1.0 is the whole of human sexuality from the beginning up until approximately 8,000 BC, or roughly 10,000 years ago. Sex 2.0 is 8,000 BC up to and including the present day, because everybody that's alive now grew up in a sex 2.0 world, and sex 3.0 is the present day forward.
Uh-huh. Now, what are some of the things that characterize sex 1.0 relationship?
Well, sex 1.0 basically is the time when human beings were hunter-gatherers. And we were a very nomadic people. We lived in tribes, typically of one or two dozen people. We had no concept of countries or cities because we had no concept of property. And this is key to the whole sex 1.0 era, because if you have no concept of property, you can have no concept of people as sexual property. So in a sex 1.0 era, all relationships were unfenced.
Okay.
And people simply competed for survival resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then when was the transition from sex 1.0 to sex 2.0?
Well, that happened. It began roughly 8,000 BC, and it spread very, very slowly. And basically, around that time, we went through the agricultural revolution. We moved away from the whole hunter-gatherer paradigm, and basically, we became farmers. And we, for the first time, had the concept of property. And the very first property in human consciousness and in human existence was land. Specifically, fertile land where you could go grow food, because now we depended on this for our survival. And at this point in history, once you have the concept of property, the concept of men treating women as sexual property became more and more important.
Okay, now what are, and you've kind of been alluding to it throughout the conversation, but what would you say are the primary flaws of the sex 2.0 relationship?
Well, I mean, basically, when we were in the sex 1.0 era, we only had one plane, or if you like, dimension of human sexuality. And that was that's defined by the word nature. In other words, we just followed our nature. There's 8.7 million species of animal on the planet, of which we are one. And in that sense, we were like all of them. We just followed our nature. Now, when the concept of property came along, which is an artificially human-invented concept, what happened is that we invented a second sexual plane, defined by the word normal. So we moved from a sex 1.0 era, where we had one plane of human sexuality, defined by the word nature, and we moved to a sex 2.0 era, where we had two sexual planes operating at the same time. One, nature. Two, normal. So at this point in history, it became possible for us to have something that is completely normal in human sexuality and something that is at the same time completely unnatural, like marriage, for example. Marriage was invented because when we went through the move to sex 2.0, we had to come up with a way to deal with paternity concern combined with the concept of property. Because one thing that doesn't change, regardless of which culture you grow up in the world, which language you speak, your ethnicity, one thing that doesn't change is that when a baby arrives, it comes out of the body of a woman. So it doesn't matter how many men she has sex with, she never has to worry that she's raising somebody else's child. In other words, she can never experience maternity concern because childbirth is self-evident. She gives birth, so she knows she's raising her kid, right? Well, men don't have that luxury. In a sex 1.0 era, this really wasn't all that important because we lived in tribes. Kids would get raised by the tribe. There was no property to pass down to any of them. Nobody was richer than anybody else because there was no such thing as an economy. And there was no such thing as money. But once you move to the sex 2.0 era, things like property and money become a survival resource. And men want to pass their survival resources down to their own children, down their own bloodline. They don't want to pass down money and houses and the farm and everything else to somebody else's bloodline. So now you have paternity concern, which only men can experience. And men could never be sure that they were raising their own children. And so that's why a new deal was needed. That's why the sex 2.0 deal was invented, to deal with paternity concern and property combined when they came together. Now, the sex 2.0 deal basically says that, and we're all raised with this because it still applies, well, we're still raised with this today. Women even today are raised their entire lives being told that they have to sell their sexuality in exchange for security. ultimately the security of marriage to a man. And at the beginning of the show, I think you said you have a guest coming up that's going to talk about this, the pressure on women to get married.
Yes.
And that's the female side of the Sex 2.0 deal. Now, the male side of the Sex 2.0 deal is that men are raised their entire lives being told if they want to have a serious long-term relationship sexually with a woman, they have to take her sexuality, throw it in the box, slam the lid shut, and stamp and label it as their property. Otherwise, it's not a legitimate relationship. And these are the two sides of the Sex 2.0 deal, which we established when we moved from Sex 1.0 to Sex 2.0.
Okay. Listeners, if you have a question or comment for my guest, J.J. Roberts, please call in 646-478-5710. When you do, press the number 1 so that I know you want to have something to say. Otherwise, I would just assume you're in my queue just listening. So, again, if you have something to ask or something to say, press the number 1. Again, the number is 646-478-5710. I'm going to take an intermission break so my guests can get a swig of water, but I will be back in about 4 to 4.5 minutes. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Bang. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous. Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahawkins, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex appeal.
This is Nikki True, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Ain't you a little wet behind the ears to be running your mouth for? You don't really want me to run in your house.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310, you are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. Like, it's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely,
confused? Join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with up-and-coming author J.J. Roberts on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. Where's the echo? I hear echo. I hear myself echoing. The number one talk radio podcast program in the category of dating and relationships on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. And tonight we're talking about the concept of sex 3.0 that relationships in the 21st century need sort of what you can call an upgrade, some modifications to take place. And my guest, his name is J.J. Roberts, and he wrote a book entitled Sex 3.0, A Sexual Revolution Manual. Let me see who I got in the chat room. I got Diva362636. I got Black Man USA. I got Apple Capital Group. I got Chris Sibbles in the chat room. I got Dr. Dawes. Dr. Dawes gave me a great review on my new book. Ooh, say it again. Matter of fact, if you heard that commercial break, you heard me. I was talking to Dr. Susan Block, and I kept saying, ooh, say it again. That's one of my number one catchphrases with women is, ooh, say it again. Yeah, whenever they say something kinky, something out of character, something that I rarely hear them say sexually, I just say, ooh, say it again. So that's the name of my new book, Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral Sex, not O-R-A-L sex, but A-U-R-A-L sex. So, yeah, I got Dr. Dodge in my chat room. I got Drea Coleman in my chat room. Justice Bourne in my chat room. Liberal Alpha One. What up? Mo One, I got Smarten Up in my chat room. I got Stan 140574444. That's right, Stan Mo One in my chat room, listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. If you want to call in and ask a question of my guest or make a comment to my guest and I, you can call in at 646-478-5710. So, Jason, what do you feel are the two primary instincts of all human beings?
Well, the number one primary instinct is survival, and that breaks down to the two primary directives, which are survival and reproduction.
Okay, survival and reproduction, and then similarly, what are the four basic needs of all human beings?
Well, I mean, it's not just human beings. It's, I mean,
all living animals, period.
There's only four things that nature demands of all creatures, or at least all the ones that we're similar to. There's only four things that if we stop doing any one of the four, that we all die. And that's eating, drinking, sleeping, and fucking, basically.
It's funny because I've had a guest on this show by the name of David X. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yeah.
And that's one of his things. He when he does a lot of his workshops, well, he actually leaves out two of those, which would be drinking and sleep, but he always says, men were put on earth for two things, eating and fucking.
He's right.
And, but, yeah, the way you broke it down, nobody can really disagree with that, because there's a lot of things we do in the busyness of our life that if we stop doing, we might not be able to live the same lifestyle we live, but we wouldn't die. But those four things you mentioned, well, three of those four, yeah, if we stop eating, we would die. If we stop drinking, we would die. If we stop sleeping, yeah, we'd pretty much die or at least be really fucked up. And fucking, I don't know if I can say if we stopped fucking, we would die, but you said that
in
your book. But
if everybody stopped doing it, human race is gone within one generation. Extinction.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true.
And when I say sleeping, I don't just mean falling asleep. I mean you need to concern yourself with finding safe shelter so you don't get attacked by predators while you're sleeping or somebody that would seek to do you harm. And if you don't do that, you die.
Okay. Okay. I would flow with that. Okay, now, something that's been discussed on this show quite a bit and in a lot of my articles and my books is the concept of the alpha. Well, I see a call. Before I move on to my next question, I'm going to take this call. Area code 760-760. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, J.J. Roberts. What's your question or comment?
Good evening. My question is, I came in late on the conversation, and my question is, what is the 3.0 upgrade? What is the upgrade? If you can just explain that briefly, what is the upgrade?
Well, actually, what's your first name?
Oh, my name is actually Dre. I'm actually Drea from the chat room.
Oh, Drea, okay. We haven't actually gotten to that quite yet.
Oh,
we've been inching our way to there. So if you can be a little bit patient, we're going to get to that in a sec. We've covered what Sex 0.0, what Sex 1.0 was, then the transition to Sex 2.0, and we've been covering some of the things, you know, in his book. But we haven't just flat out got to the portion where he explains the strengths of Sex 3.0. So we'll probably get to that about five, no more than 10 minutes from now, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jay, I was going to ask you, I lost my train of thought. Something I've talked about quite a bit in my books, my articles, and on this show is the alpha males versus beta males. Mm-hmm. What's your general definition of the attributes that an alpha male possesses versus the attributes that a beta male possesses?
Well, when it comes down to it, the whole alpha-beta dynamic is at the core of when we look at Sex 1.0, which is basically how we've done things for 95% of the time in the entire human history. When you don't have any concept of money or finance, the sexual marketplace only operates on alpha and beta. Now, this plugs into a concept called the genetic imperatives, which is absolutely fits in with what you talk about with your mode one stuff. Essentially, an alpha male is the last man standing. If shit goes down, the alpha would be the last man standing. And the beta would be the guy that would never dare to challenge the alpha. So alpha males are dominant, they're strong, they're leaders, and this plugs straight into a woman's genetic imperative. Now, the genetic imperatives of men and women have always been different for simple reasons of biology. Now, when I say genetic imperative, what that means is no more than DNA survival, the best DNA survival strategy. That's what genetic imperative means. It doesn't mean anything else. Now, because women, when they get pregnant, and presuming the pregnancy goes the full term, they can't produce another viable egg for about 9.5 months, whereas men can produce sperm all the time, right?
Right.
So men's genetic imperative, in other words, their best DNA survival strategy, always has been, since the beginning of history, and whether women like this or not, to have sex with lots of fertile women. Whereas women's genetic imperative, because physically they're not as strong, when they get pregnant, they're more vulnerable, and they need protection for not just themselves, but for their child. Women's genetic imperative in sex 1.0 era, they had only one genetic imperative as well. That's to seek high quality alpha male DNA and physical protection and security, not just for themselves, but for their child as well. So in a sex 1.0 era, both men and women had one genetic imperative. For men, have sex with as many fertile women as possible. For women, high quality alpha male DNA, physical protection and security. So what that means is, for the entire history of the human race, broadly speaking, men have always sought to entice women into sex, and women have always sought to entice men into commitment. So those are the two genetic imperatives of men and women in 1.0. Now, when we move to 2.0, it changed somewhat. Women, because we had this concept now of the economy and of money, that became an important survival resource for women who were seeking protection and security, because someone who's rich can provide that. So when we moved to sex 2.0, women developed a second genetic imperative. And the second genetic imperative was to seek a partner who can provide financial security for both themselves and their children, and to try to prevent other women from diluting such an arrangement. So now, women have two genetic imperatives, and men, in the move from 1.0 to 2.0, our genetic imperatives stayed the same. In other words, we still had one, which is to seek and to find attractive women who are give signs of fertility, typically youth, beauty, curves in all the right places. And so that's why men and women find different things attractive in the opposite sex. Now, this fits in with the mode one stuff, because when it comes to this sex 2.0 marketplace, men, they have to, in a typical scenario, go on a date, which is essentially an audition. It's an audition to be the next guy to take their sexuality, throw it in the box, slam the lid shut, and stamp and label it as their property to deal with their paternity concern. And they have to hide their primary genetic imperative. In other words, they don't say what's on their mind, which is, this plugs right in with your mode one stuff, that men should speak their mind. They shouldn't hide their primary genetic imperative. Right?
Right, right. Well, matter of fact, now that I got you talking about, well, I would prefer you say mode one philosophy. You keep saying mode one stuff. But let me get you one thing that's part of my show pretty much every week, is when even someone talks about the concept of being straightforwardly honest or mentions something related to my book, I get them to stretch out the O's and give me their best mode one. So, JJ, go ahead and give me a mode one.
Mode one.
Mode one.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mode one.
Up front, straightforward.
Mode one. Alan Roger Curry.
Mode one. Yeah, but yeah, my book, as you know, and most of my listeners, unless somebody's a new listener and totally unfamiliar with me, my book, the gist of it is about encouraging men to express their romantic and or sexual desires, interests, and intentions to women in a manner that is more highly self-assured, more upfront, more unapologetic, and straightforwardly honest. Mode two would be a guy who's honest but more cautious and beat around the bush. Mode three, that would be a guy who's just totally full of shit, who either tends to totally hide his true desires and interests or mislead women or lie to women about what his true desires, interests are. And Mo 4 is a man who's very angry and bitter and resentful towards women. He essentially is a misogynist. So those are the four modes of verbal communication I talk about in my books. But as you were saying about, I think you were talking about how...
Well, I mean, your original question was about alpha and beta.
Okay.
And when you move from the sex 1.0 to sex 2.0 and you understand how the sexual marketplace changed, alpha and beta still echoes loud and clear in this society. If, you know, if a guy, when shit goes down, if a woman feels like they're with a guy that would be the last man standing or one of the last men standing, that's a very attractive quality to a woman because of her genetic imperatives, protection for herself and her child. So that's why alpha males still today in a sex 2.0 society are very attractive.
Okay. Okay. Now you explain, I think you did already, but if you haven't, I'm going to have you explain. Did you already explain the difference between a man and woman's natural behavior versus normal behavior?
Yeah, essentially when we, in sex 1.0, we only had natural. We didn't have these two sexual planes, normal and natural. When we moved to sex 2.0, in order to deal with paternity concern combined with this new concept that we came up with, property, we came up with a new deal. And the new deal essentially was marriage. And we came up with the sex 2.0 deal and the sex 2.0 schism, which is having these two planes operating at the same time, which is the cause of most of the confusion in modern sexual relationships. And the idea that you can now have something that is normal but is not natural, or vice versa.
Now, you know, chapter 17 really caught my attention because you just very boldly say marriage is unnatural. So I want you to explain and elaborate on that a little bit, why you feel marriage is unnatural.
Well, first of all, we've been outvoted. There's 8.7 million species of animal on the planet. We're the only one that gets married. So 8.7 million to one against is a pretty heavy outvote when you want to talk about nature. We're the only species that gets married. And it's not because we're so intelligent. Dolphins don't waste precious survival resources in divorce courts with lawyers. That doesn't make dolphins less intelligent than us. You could argue the exact opposite.
There ain't no prenup agreements in the animal world.
They don't waste time with that bullshit. That doesn't make them stupid. Now, the argument that marriage is natural is a completely self-defeating argument. Because if marriage was natural, the sequence would go like this. Guy and girl meet. Guy and girl hook up. Guy and girl spend the rest of their life together in monogamy and are faithful. That would be the natural sequence of things if marriage was natural.
Well, you know, that's funny because on a couple of my shows over the past couple of years or so, I've talked about whenever we get into deep discussions about monogamy, I always say there's two types of monogamy. There's, well, one of them involves, borrowing your word, natural. I say there's natural monogamy, and then there's what I refer to as obligatory monogamy. And I say the only, what I usually tell my listeners and followers is, the only monogamous relationship that's going to ever work are those relationships where the monogamy is natural, meaning that, along the lines of what you're saying, even if you didn't decide to go down the altar, even if there was no such concept as marriage, you still would naturally just want to have sex with just that one person you're with. Whereas obligatory, if you have to fight the temptation to fuck somebody else other than your partner, then that's not natural monogamy. I always say that's obligatory monogamy. And obligatory monogamy, in my opinion, never, ever works.
And, well, if you say obligatory monogamy, I'd say fenced, because it's based on enforced monogamy, which is exactly what fenced means. And voluntary monogamy is exactly what an unfenced relationship is. It's simply an unfenced relationship where you choose not to exercise your option because you're not interested.
Yeah, because one thing that's interesting that I experienced, and I don't, maybe this is not related, but I had a relationship with a young lady back in the day where neither one of us never talked about being monogamous. We never talked about, you know, using the terms boyfriend or girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She never put any pressure on me to be exclusive. I never put any pressure on her to be exclusive. But yet, over the course of our relationship, neither one of us ever had sex with anybody else. It was interesting. It's probably one of, for me personally, it was one of the more interesting relationships I've had where I was just kind of naturally monogamous with her. She never, again, she never asked me to be monogamous, but I, through the course, and we didn't date, you know, super long, but in the course that we did date, I never really developed a desire to have sex with anybody else, and neither did she. And but we, there was always the option was open for us to see other people.
Well, that's the most natural relationship of all. That's how we've been for 95% of the last 100% of the entire history of the human race.
Yeah.
We only came up with this natural plane and the sex 2.0 deal. And the whole you have to sell your sexuality in exchange for security, and men have to throw women's sexuality in boxes and stamp the lid shut. We only came up with that in the most recent 5% of the time of human history. So you're talking about a relationship that for you was natural.
Okay, now, what's your thoughts on men and women becoming jealous and possessive?
When I spoke earlier about you can have things that are normal but are not natural, this is one of them. Jealousy and possessiveness in human sexual relationships is completely normal. It's also not natural. And I'll explain why. Most people think it is natural because they've only ever had fenced relationships their entire life. And they've only observed other people having fenced relationships their entire lives. Now, you need to think back to the two sexual planes, okay? You have natural, you have normal. Property and the concept of property is an artificial human construct. In other words, it belongs on the normal plane. It doesn't exist on the natural plane. Now, to break it down, we need to break down the difference between envy, jealousy, and possessiveness, because a lot of people think they're the same things, but they're not, and they have different root causes. Jealousy is basically a feeling of insecurity. Well, let's talk about sexual jealousy specifically. Sexual jealousy is a feeling of insecurity about a person that you presumed that you owned sexually, and now you're not sure. And now you're feeling insecure, and now you're feeling terrible. And sometimes it's a sick to the stomach kind of feeling. That's jealousy. Whereas envy, the root cause of envy is really just a feeling of discomfort or anger about the perceived advantage that somebody else has. So you see, envy and jealousy are not the same thing. But people confuse them and they think they are the same thing. They routinely say, oh, I'm so jealous when they see, you know, their neighbor's new car or their new girlfriend or their perfectly mown lawn or whatever.
Okay, so tell me again, what's the difference between jealousy and envy?
There are two different root causes. Jealousy, root cause, a feeling of insecurity about someone you presume that you own sexually and now you're not so sure, you're insecure.
Okay.
And this insecurity drives you crazy. That's jealousy.
Okay.
Envy, a feeling of discomfort or anger about the perceived advantage that someone else has. And the root cause of possessiveness is fear of loss. Now, the reason that jealousy cannot possibly be natural is because the root cause of it is the feeling of insecurity about a person that you thought that you owned sexually. The concept of property we only came up with about 10,000 years ago. It belongs on the normal plane. Now, envy, okay, envy is natural. And possessiveness, well, the root cause of that is fear of loss. So I wouldn't argue that that's not natural either. But in terms of jealousy, that belongs totally and completely on the normal sexual plane. And it doesn't exist on the natural sexual plane. It's completely normal, but it's not natural.
Okay. What's your definition of a woman being a slut or a whore?
Well, those two words, I mean, they're fairly meaningless to me, but they're shaming words that were invented in order to enforce the sex 2.0 deal. Now, anybody, whether they're heterosexual or homosexual, male or female, if they fall outside of this sex 2.0 deal, if they dare to do that, then society will round on them and it will shame them. So slut essentially means you're having more sex than I approve of. Or you're advertising your sexuality in a way that triggers my paternity consent. And you don't seem to be going along with this sex 2.0 deal, so you must be shamed. And the crazy thing is that both men and women call women sluts. Men, because it triggers their paternity consent. You're having more sex than I approve of, or you're advertising your sexuality in a way that I disapprove of because it triggers my paternity consent. You're not following the sex 2.0 deal, which everyone in society says you're supposed to. And women call women sluts because women, when they observe this behavior in other women, they feel threatened because they're saying, you're giving away something for free that I believe I need to sell in order to survive.
And that's funny you would say that. I don't know if you know about my event I was part of a little over a year ago, the Direct Dating Summit in London. Uh-huh. And that's actually one of the things I talked about. I talked about that very concept you're talking about right now. I said that one of the reasons, because I was asking the guys, because as you know, a lot of guys are afraid. Number one, they're afraid of rejection,
mm-hmm.
and they're afraid to be straightforward about their sexual desires because they're afraid of being, you know, criticized and getting a negative reaction. But something I said to the audience that really made the guys in the audience think, I said, think about a scenario where you're the one who's denying someone something and you're pissed. It's just mm-hmm. like, if you asked me to borrow $500 and I said no, wouldn't you think you should be the one disappointed and possibly pissed because you're the one who wanted something and you're not getting it?
Yeah.
Why would I be pissed off if I'm the one denying you something?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question I posed to the audience. I said, now, if you went up to a woman and said, you know, in one way or another, I want to fuck you. And she gets pissed off. I said, you have to really rub your chin and ask yourself, why is she pissed off if she's the one denying me pussy?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I said that a lot of women do get pissed, even though they're the ones in the position to deny you what you want, is because women, they look at their, most women, I ain't going to say all women, but a good number of women, I'll say particularly what I refer to as manipulative type women, they look at their pussy as a form of currency.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not offering them something in exchange, I said most manipulative women, they don't want to exchange pussy for dick. A non-manipulative woman will. She'll just exchange her sexual companionship for your sexual companionship. But a manipulative woman feels in her mind, either on a conscious level, sometimes, she feels like she should be offered something for her sexual companionship. And I said, these women resent other women who give away pussy for free. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, that ties in with what you're talking about the free versus not free.
Well, I mean, essentially, whether the sexual marketplace is always operating before money was ever invented back in the sex 1.0 era. Now, in the sex 2.0 era that we're in now, it's still a marketplace. Now, a woman will look at a guy and might look at him like, oh, maybe he's good, like marriage material. And they'll want to date that guy. And a woman will look at another guy. In other words, she'll look at a guy. You remember when I talked about women's two sexual imperatives?
Mm.
That's the second one. A guy that can look after her financially and her children and provide security in that way. So a woman will look at one guy and will say, he's maybe decent marriage material. I want to date that guy. And the same woman can look at another guy and will want to fuck him just because he's a fuckable guy.
I agree with that.
And the reason he's a fuckable guy is because he is providing something, but he's providing the satisfaction for the first genetic imperative, the need for the alpha male, the need for a guy who's strong, who's a leader, a guy that's desired by other women. There's nothing that drives a woman more crazy than a guy that other women want.
Oh, right. Man, see, you're hitting on another thing. That's, I hate to keep comparing your stuff to my stuff, but it's funny when I was reading. Well, I just naturally do that. I'm sorry. Whenever I read anybody's book, and particularly the books of my guests who have somewhat of a similar theme, I always see what themes or beliefs or philosophy they have that is similar to mine. And then, of course, I look for those that might be starkly different from mine. But anyway, in my newest book, Ooh, Say It Again, that's one of my things I have in there. Is I have this phrase that a lot of guys have been writing me about, asking about. I said, pussy attracts pussy. And I essentially go on to say what you just said, is that, you know, I found both through my own experiences as well as the experience of some of my male friends, when women see that you're getting a lot of flattering attention and sexual attention from other women, more often than not, that makes them want to fuck you more. And I basically said on my show a couple of times, my own late mother even acknowledged that. I remember when I was young, me and my mother were having a discussion, and she said one time, she said, one thing I'm going to let you know, son, she said, no woman wants a guy who she feels other women don't want. She said, she actually compared it to stocks. She said, women most want guys who they perceive as a soaring stock. They don't want a dropping stock. And, but yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's all about SMV, sexual marketplace value. If you have a high SMV, for any reason, women will want you.
Yeah.
So there's always, the marketplace is always in operation. And back in the sex 1.0 era, it was always in operation too. Except that back then, the only currency was alpha and beta, because there was no property and there was no money. There was no economy. So that's the only basis on which sexual marketplace value, or what I call SMV, can operate. And that's what we did for 95% of the time of the entire existence of the human race. So, of course, it's still in operation now.
Okay, I'm going to take my last intermission break, but when I get back, I want to ask you about a couple of more things, and then I want you to briefly, maybe not go into all the details, but just kind of give a preview for my listeners of what Sex 3.0 is about. Listeners, if you have a question for my guests, a comment for my guests, you can call in 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'll be right back after this 4.5-minute intermission break. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront, Straightforward, and Low One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Low One.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindsets is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so the listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like he said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with up-and-coming author J.J. Roberts on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, and I'm hearing that echo again. Yeah, that echo. We're talking tonight with a gentleman who wrote a book called Sex 3.0, a Sexual Revolution Manual, and his name is J.J. Roberts. And he's just been going through some of the general concepts that he outlines in his book. Now, you have a chapter called Revenge of the Nerds. What is that all about?
Well, essentially, in a Sex 1.0 era, the whole alpha-beta thing, mm-hmm. men were very polarized at either one of the spectrum. They're either alpha or beta, because with no money or economy or anything else, and of course women only had one genetic imperative back then, it was kind of self-enforcing. If the guy was a leader, then he was dominant. And if he was a leader and he was dominant, he's the guy that women would be attracted to. And if you're a guy that's afraid to challenge the leader and you're weak and you're a pussy, you're a beta. And you're not going to be, women are not going to select you. And it's self-enforcing, because when women see that other women are not going to select you, then you become even less desirable. So it self-enforces itself even more. And the alpha guys that have this pre-selection going for them, not only pre-selection by women, but social proof by other men. In other words, men respect them and women want to be with them. They just become even more and more desirable. So in a Sex 1.0 world, it was totally polarized. There was like almost nothing in between, alpha and beta. Alpha guys got all the women, all the sex. Beta guys, sexless existence, basically. Now, Revenge of the Nerds, to answer your question, is basically when we moved to a Sex 2.0 era, women got this second genetic imperative, the need for financial support, security for themselves and their children, just to best ensure their survival and the survival of their children. Now, if in the Sex 2.0 era, which we're all living in now, if you're a guy that's beta, but is wealthy, you can satisfy the second genetic imperative. Not the first, but at least now you have a role to play. Because before, you didn't have any place in the, you didn't have any sexual marketplace value. You had no SMV. But now in the Sex 2.0 era, you have what I call spectrum correction. And now things are not so polarized totally with alphas and betas. And now across the spectrum, instead of everything being totally polarized, there's guys that are all along the spectrum. There's guys that have mostly alpha traits but some beta. There's beta guys that have some alpha traits. And now the beta guys, they get their revenge, because now they have a role to play. And so the nerds get their revenge.
I'm going to send you through Facebook, and you'll probably find this a very interesting read. I write these articles for TheExaminer.com, and I wrote this article. It's probably, to this date, one of my more popular articles. I got a lot of views on it, but it was about alpha males and beta males. And similar to what you just said, I didn't just clearly divide guys into alpha males. I actually had four guys. I had total alpha males with beta tendencies, beta males with alpha tendencies, and then total beta males. And I got a lot of feedback on that article, but it goes along the lines of what you were saying.
Yeah, because it's only in Sex 1.0 that it was totally polarized, like alpha beta. Now we all live in Sex 2.0, and it's all speckled along the spectrum. Guys are, you know, can be anywhere along the scale, and it's not so polarized.
Yeah. Okay, now, since we only got about maybe 10 minutes left or so, give us a general outline of how Sex 3.0 improves upon the weaknesses of sex 2.0.
Okay. 10 minutes is probably not enough to go into the whole sex 3.0.
Well, I actually don't want you to go into the whole, because I want guys, of course, buy your book. And so I don't want you to give all the information on sex 3.0, but just if you give some broad strokes of it.
Okay, well, we need to revisit the whole sex 2.0 deal and take a look at why it was established in order to understand why now it's broken down. So earlier I talked about the sex 2.0 deal and the male and the female side of the sex 2.0 deal. Remember, the female side, women are raised and told you have to sell your sexuality in exchange for security. And the male side of the sex 2.0 deal, guys are told you have to take a woman's sexuality, throw it in a box, slam the lid shut, stamp and label it as your property. Otherwise, the relationship is not a legitimate relationship, and you have to be worried about paternity concern and who you're passing down your property to. Now, in the modern Western world, at least, women have social mobility. What that means is that women have the, if they want them, their own jobs, their own career, their own money. They can provide their own security. They don't need a man to do it. So the female side of the sex 2.0 deal has broken down. Now, the male side of the sex 2.0 deal was established to deal with property and paternity concerns. But in my country, in England, in the 1950s, we came across this thing called DNA. And in the 1980s and 1990s, paternity testing based on DNA was invented. And in the last 10, 15 years, it got to the point where you could walk into a pharmacy, buy a testing kit for less than $100. That didn't even involve injections. You could just take a cheek swab. And you could do it at home. You don't even need a doctor. And it establishes paternity with greater than 99.9% accuracy. So the male side of the sex 2.0 deal is broken down as well. It's gone. So the whole society that we're living in and the whole deal that this was based on is history. And but the thing is, that's only happened in the last, well, in case of women having their own social mobility and careers, and that's only happened in the last 50 years. And in case of DNA testing, that's only arrived in the last 10 to 15 years, which in the entire scale of human sexual history is a blink of an eye. If the whole scale of human sexual history was a 24-hour day, all of that stuff would have happened a fraction of a second to midnight. But that's where we're living now. That stuff has happened. The sex 2.0 deal is not valid because it's not relevant anymore. And the society we're living in now is undergoing what I call a cascading failure. And the whole of the sex 2.0 deal is falling down. And when I say cascading failure, I mean it's like a hole in a dam that starts really small, but it erodes the area around the dam and it makes the hole bigger and more water comes through. And then that erodes the dam more and more, and you get to the point where the whole thing just cascades and it falls and it collapses. And essentially, that's where we are now in current human sexual history. The whole thing's coming down.
And what are some of the obvious signs that it's coming down?
The collapse of marriage. Take a look at the marriage statistics. Human beings in the entire history of humanity have never been sexually monogamous. But in the sex 2.0 era, we had to pretend that we were. So we had to follow the dating, which is a try before you buy agreement that's meant to ultimately lead to marriage. But people just, they're not following this route so much. A lot of people, for example, they date and they're serially monogamous, but, you know, they delay marriage or they never get married. And the reason they do that is because they want to avoid the, you know, the relationship duress and the pressure and the insults of being seen to not follow the Sex 2.0 deal. So that's not what the Sex 2.0 deal was designed for. It was designed for marriage and establishing all of this stuff. It wasn't designed for, you know, shelter for women to avoid being called a slut or a whore because they're not following the Sex 2.0 deal. And it wasn't designed for guys to simply make a woman off unavailable. I don't want to marry her, but I want to make her unavailable to all the other guys in the world. But that's increasingly what it's being used for in modern society. And that's what we're seeing. And you're seeing less marriage and more divorce in basically all Western society.
Okay. Now, I know you mentioned it a few times, and you probably already explained it, but once again, relationship duress, that's when you just feel basically pressured to be in a relationship?
Relationship duress is something that people experience pretty much every day of their life on a constant basis from all sides. Friends, family, complete strangers. Relationship duress is essentially whenever anybody, a third party, says to you, you should or you must, when it comes to your sexual relationships, that's relationship duress. It could be your family telling you to settle down, do the right thing, whatever. Anytime anybody says to you, you should or you must, this is a relationship duress is a very, very Sex 2.0 concept. And it's relentless and it's daily. And even today, there's like new relationship duress words being invented. Like I saw an interview with George Clooney because, you know, he's a guy that doesn't settle down and get married. The, of course, female author described him and his like as kidults. In other words, little kids that never grew up. This is a form of relationship duress. And a self-defeating one, because the sign of an adult is a guy that stands up and makes his own decisions. And a little kid is someone who gets bullied and told what to do. But people, you know, gossip columnists, relationship advice columns, it's just full of relationship duress. And it's constant and it comes from all sides.
Okay.
Thankfully, in Sex 3.0, there is no relationship duress.
Okay. Now, what do you have on your plate coming up in 2012? Are you going to start doing Sex 3.0 workshops? How have women responded to your book?
You know, the really weird thing is I started on this, you know, when I was traveling around the world and writing and researching this book, which I did for more than a year, maybe a year and a half.
Okay.
The concepts that I talk about are very contra-doctrinal. In other words, they go against what society indoctrinates you with your entire life. And the really weird thing is that I expected everybody, especially women, to disagree with everything that I said. And it started out with most women agreeing with what I said. And then I got better and better at expressing my ideas and my philosophies, and it ended up with basically now everybody I meet agrees with me, which is really funny.
Okay.
How much time we got left?
Just a couple minutes. I want you to let my listeners know where can they find you on the World Wide Web? How can they find your book?
I got two sites, the official site and the Facebook page. Easiest way, just type Sex 3.0 into Google. The first page will be the official website, and within the first four hits, you'll see the official Facebook page too. At the beginning, you said it was an ebook. It's actually both a paperback and an ebook.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And your listeners get $10 off the paperback if they go to the official website. There's details there how you can get $10 off the paperback.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Hear that, listeners? $10 off if you listen to them tonight on Upfront and Straightforward. Well, JJ, it's been a pleasure having you all the way from Bulgaria. And I wish
Thanks
you
nothing
but continued success. And I'm sure you and I will be talking via Facebook. And listeners, join me next week. Join me next week as I welcome a woman named Nicole Mollier. I think I'm pronouncing her last name right. We'll be talking about the pressure of that women experience to get married. Women who feel pressured by either friends, family, parents, etc. to get married. And until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. I will talk to you next Thursday.